Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Not just on Talk Radio, of course. You can watch us live now on YouTube, on Facebook and on Twitter. We are live streaming. And of course, this morning, there is only really one story in town. And it is, of course, the coronavirus. It doesn't appear to be going anywhere and we are still really none the wiser. But here's a few questions for you. Is it a worldwide epidemic? Is it a threat to our financial networks and world economy? Will it finish off our ability to travel from now until the end of the year? Are there any no-go areas we should know about? Are our schools now all going to be shut down because people have been on skiing holidays to northern Italy? The coronavirus is front and centre of the news this morning. At schools are closing up and down the country. Hotels are shutting down in the middle of the Mediterranean. There's one shutting down in Tenerife. Thousands of people are in quarantine all over the world. And now even the Iranian deputy health minister has been diagnosed with it. Our own foreign office is now warning against all but essential travel to 11 affected towns in northern Italy. And a Six Nations game between Ireland and Italy might even be called off this weekend. We're also hearing that the Euros might be called off during the summer. We've so far been told the Olympics will go ahead. And as if all of that wasn't bad enough, a government memo predicting a worst case scenario says 80% of the country could be infected by the time we're all finished with it, and 500,000 people could die. I'll just say that again. 500,000 people could die. That is the population of a pretty large city. It's 500,000 people. I mean, for heaven's sake, Remainers will be terrified with this doomsday scenario because, of course, it's like Operation Yellowhammer all over again. What is the point of the government saying, on the one hand, please don't panic, there's nothing to worry about, just wash your hands quite a lot, but on the other hand, worst case scenario, 500,000 of you are going to drop dead. Brilliant. Isn't it time we all got a bit of perspective? 0344 499 1000 is the number. We want to hear from you on this because the voices of common sense need to be heard here. There's all sorts of lockdowns being reported. The front pages of the papers in Scotland are warning that Scotland is going to be on lockdown altogether and people won't be allowed to travel in and out of the country. You know, before you know what's going on, there'll be people stockpiling again, just like they did before the end of January because they thought Brexit was going to lead to all sorts of calamities. Why are we living in this kind of world where everybody's telling is how bad things are going to get instead of being told how good things are going to get? We've got a massive show for you today. We're talking European trade deals. The European Union seems to be under the impression that we haven't actually left yet, given Michel Barnier's aggressive demands over access to our fishing waters. We'll be talking to French politician Charles-Henri Gallois on The View from the other side of the channel. And former Brexit Party MEP Alex Phillips joins us as well for Prime Minister's Questions. And she, of course, joined me yesterday on Plank of the Week, and we'll be talking about who got the number one nomination for that. 03444991000. And also, Dawn Neesom is here, former editor of the Daily Star. She's going to give us her take on the return to the UK of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. That's right, the world's most unpopular couple have come back for their final hurrah as bona fide members of the royal family. And they're looking pretty miserable so far as well. You're listening to me and watching me right here on YouTube, Mike Graham. I'm here in the Independent Republic, and this is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham, Talk Radio.
Now, as many of you will have noticed, there is such a thing as the coronavirus. It started in a place called Wuhan in China that very few people had ever heard of. It soon kind of spread to other parts of Southeast Asia. It then suddenly started to spread to Europe. It then started to spread to the UK. It then started to spread to cruise ships. It then started to spread to hotels. It's now spread to schools in this country. We've got a situation where several schools, all of whom sent their children off to skiing holidays in northern Italy, which was something I didn't know they really did. It turns out my own children's school went there as well. My kids didn't go. However, there is, of course, a situation where lots of people are having their children returned to them, which must be a bit of a nightmare if you're trying to go out to work and your kids have been told to self-isolate at home. If you're in that position and you're in that situation, I would love to hear from you. 03444991000. Ever since this story has been around, I have always questioned the kind of veracity of giving out, on the one hand, a message that everything is fine and that nobody should panic. And then on the other hand, a government memo is out saying that 500,000 people could die. Let's get some perspective on this. Let's talk to Dr. David Lloyd, who's a North London GP. David, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. Are you noticing any difference in your day-to-day work?
Well, it all kicked off yesterday because, as you say, everybody arrived back from half-term from the ski holidays in northern Italy. So, yes, we've got a small change, yes.
I must admit, I had no idea so many schools went to the same part of Italy for their skiing holidays at half-term.
I learned to ski in northern Italy, so it's a very good place to learn.
I'm sure it is. I mean, I went on a skiing holiday, as I was saying, many years ago, more years ago than I care to remember when I was at school.
Yeah,
I think I was about 13
yeah.
or 14. I went to a place called Adelboden, which I think was in Austria.
I've been there.
I also discovered, even though I didn't actually think about it, but there was probably a memo that went around, my own children's school also went there, and that's in Sussex, and they've put out a letter basically to parents saying, look, we have taken the advice of Public Health England, and therefore presumably they've sent home the kids who were out on that particular holiday. So what have you noticed?
Well, I think that I said the other day, and I've regretted it ever since, but one advantage over a lot of countries in that we do have a semblance of a telephone line that gives help to patients. So
yes.
We have the 111 helpline. So people who ring that can be isolated and swabbed and don't need to come near people or come near institutions like A&Es and GP surgeries, where if we all catch it and have to stop work for 2 weeks, we'll bring about slight chaos in the health service.
So, well, that is the problem, isn't it? Because presumably, I mean, I don't know what the structure is of the way it all works, but if somebody does call that number, who then goes to check on them?
So what's happening in North West London, we have people in a special team, they get gowned up in spacesuits and they go around and they swab them at home so that they aren't spreading the virus about, and then we can take it from there.
Yes, so what you're saying is that I could be sitting happily in my house one day watching This Morning or watching talk radio on TV, and suddenly this van turns up, people get out of it dressed in the sort of, the hazmat suits and go next door.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I used to do it during the swine flu.
Really?
I did it myself, yeah.
I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous, but I could imagine some people would get quite worried if they saw that.
Well, I mean, I think that's it. It's getting the mix right, isn't it? You quoted the numbers. I made it 600,000 dying rather than 500,000.
Oh, really?
Dying.
Okay.
But it's the same number. It's as deadly as flu, and flu kills about 2% of the population who get it. And the trouble is that none of us have come into contact with this virus before, so the figures say that 60% of us will get it. So if you multiply 60% by 50 million by 2%, you get 600,000.
Right. But unfortunately, that, again, is something I'm not sure the government is wise to put out. And I'm not, again, sure how that leak came about and how it got into the newspapers, but it's a Public Health England memo, it would seem.
Mm.
And so, obviously, you have to give it some credibility. But as I said earlier, it's a bit like the Operation Yellowhammer thing that came out about Brexit. You know, it's a worst-case scenario. But I think sometimes the public are not quite, sort of aware of what that means.
Well, it's the 600,000. I mean, the people who are going to die in this pandemic are going to be the people that are over 65 with other diseases. They're the ones that suffer, unfortunately, during a flu epidemic. It seems that this virus is very good to children, so everybody worries about children. But apparently, the children sail through this virus and have no problems. Yeah, young adults are going to get a flu-like illness and fully recover.
Yeah,
it's going to be the ones who've got chest problems in the past that are going to be the ones that we have to watch out for.
Sure, and that can happen at any age as well, can't it? Because I think I'm right in saying that the latest casualty that we've seen, the first person in France who's actually French has died today, who was only 60.
Yes, well, and don't forget the those tragic doctors in China who died, and one of them was 34. So
yes,
you're it is, that's frightening. But it, on the other hand, it is a virus. It is like a flu virus, and so most of us are going to get over it and get through it.
It is difficult to know what to do, though, isn't it, as an ordinary member of the public? Because, for example, in big cities like London and Manchester and probably Glasgow, Liverpool, people are travelling cheek by jowl on public transport, trying to get to work every day, increasing presumably their risk of infection. What would your advice be to them?
Well, I think there are two phases to this. We're in the so-called containment phase at the moment, where we're trying really hard.
It's not going very well, though, is it? The containment phase. it's going everywhere.
I can't possibly comment. But anyway, that's the plan.
Yeah.
And I guess that if we can get through winter, because you heard today how stretched our A&E departments are and things, if we can just delay the epidemic until all the other viruses are out of the way, then that might give us a chance to keep people alive better.
Yes. But you say that with such calmness in your voice, that, you know, you're talking about keeping people alive. I'm looking at the front page of the Scottish Daily Mail that was sent to me, and it says, Scotland faces virus lockdown. GPs told to shut suspected coronavirus patients in isolated rooms. Medical chief warns of ban on sports events and concerts. Dozens of Scots quarantined in a Tenerife hotel. Yeah. All of which is true. You might say it's a bit sort of panicky, and it's causing people to be more worried than they should be. But I mean, that's actually the truth, isn't it?
Well, I think it's worth having a go at it, because look what's happened in China. They had an awful lot of bother, and they've really succeeded. The numbers in China are coming down now because of those draconian isolation measures that they put onto the cities.
Yes,
and they've done, and they are bringing the numbers down. So there's evidence that being draconian in terms of isolation does work.
Yes.
And so we ought to give that a go first before we say, oh, no, let's all get it and just deal with the death later.
Right. So, I mean, is there anything that you guys get in terms of a communique from the government that we don't see? I mean, I'm not asking you to betray any confidences, but
Well, I can give you the address. No, every day at 2 o'clock, the Department of Health upgrades the advice website, and I'm sure that's the one you've got as well.
Yes.
And then occasionally we get another little bit of stuff. But I think that, for instance, the stuff about masks and isolation is changing every day. Everybody sees people walking around in masks, but do they really protect? I think the answer is probably no. But we can do things to make sure we're not spreading the virus. Wash our hands more frequently. Don't touch our noses. Mm. You know.
And how can you measure and how can you judge, for example, whether it's either getting worse or you're sort of hitting a plateau? How can you do that?
Well, one of the interesting things that the Department of Health have done started yesterday is they're actually going to start randomly sampling people with flu-like illness around the country. So I haven't read of this being done in any other part of the world.
Mm.
So there are lots of GPs and hospitals around the country who are used to swabbing people with flu-like illness just to monitor the, if you like, the background infections going around. And we get a weekly update if you want to watch it, and it shows you that. And so they're actually going to start testing for coronavirus
is that your coronavirus alert going off there?
No, it's not. It's people.
Another case has emerged. But it's a sort of surreal conversation. I've had many of these conversations, as I'm having with you, with many doctors and medical experts. And
don't forget, the doctors rather like treating sick people, so you've got to be careful when you're talking to us, because we get sort of mildly excited about these sorts of things.
It's a bit like John Bon Jovi coming into talk radio, as he just did. But, I mean, so, as far as your general advice goes, because there's talk of a Six Nations game between Ireland and Italy being cancelled at the weekend.
Yes.
I keep being asked by people, is it a good idea to go abroad? You know, if you're going away for the weekend, are you risking getting stuck wherever you're going? You know, I mean, people are in Tenerife, people are in the Canary Islands, you know.
Well, I think I think you do risk it, because you ring 111 and they'll say, you know, just go to your house for 2 weeks. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
The disruption that's going to be caused by the isolation orders. You know, if you're child is sent home from school for 2 weeks, that means you've got to take 2 weeks off work to look after your child.
Well, that's another problem, isn't it, for a lot of people?
Yes, that's going to cause the most disruption. It's just people in isolation, not ill, unable to do their job. So maybe this is going to hasten home working. We should all be talking on the phone more, using Skype more. We're going to be, an awful lot of stuff is going to be done at home, which I suppose is an advantage in this modern world compared to, you know, 2009 during swine flu.
Mm.
We have got more developed IT systems so that more stuff can be done at home. And then it'll be the delivery drivers and the Uber drivers that are delivering all our food. They're going to be the ones that get it rather than us.
Yes, absolutely right. Well, listen, I'm sure we'll be in touch again, Dr. David Lloyd. Thank you very much indeed, North London GP. The facts of the matter are these. Yes, there is a virus which is going around the world at quite a rapid rate. Yes, people are dying. I mean, I've got a list here of the numbers of countries which are now infected, and let me give them to you just because I can. China, South Korea, Italy, Japan, Iran, Singapore, Hong Kong, USA, Thailand, Taiwan, Bahrain, Australia, Malaysia, Germany, Vietnam, France, the United Kingdom, the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Canada, Macau, Spain, Iraq, Oman, Philippines, India, Austria, Croatia, Israel, Russia, Afghanistan, Algeria, Belgium, Cambodia, Egypt, Finland, Lebanon, Nepal, Sri Lanka, Sweden, Switzerland and Brazil. It might have been easy to read out a list of countries that don't have the coronavirus, in fact. But let me hear from you, because if you've been told to look after your kids, that they've been sent home, you have to take 2 weeks off to keep them in isolation, you know, that must be a bit of a nightmare. What are you being told by your employers? What are you being told by your travel agent? What are you being told by your travel company, by your airline? We need to know what is being said out there, because we need to get to grips with this and not panic, right?
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We've got Prime Minister's questions coming up in about 15 minutes' time, because it will be the first time, excitingly for all of you and us as well, that we've seen Boris Johnson since about 2 weeks ago, when the last Prime Minister's questions took place, because, of course, Parliament has been in recess. He's been under a lot of pressure from various points to say that he should be showing his face in the flooded areas of this country, which he hasn't done. So we'll be interested to see what he looks like. Apart from anything else, has he grown a beard, you know? Has he changed his hairstyle? Is he wearing different clothes? We shall see. We'll bring you all of that live, though, as it happens, in the company of Alex Phillips. We're going to talk to you very shortly on the phones as well. But first, let's have a listen to Alex Phillips, the former Brexit Party MEP. She was, of course, with us yesterday filming Plank of the Week. And it starts with her talking about Yorkshire tea.
Oh, this is a brilliant one. It's got to win, surely. All of those lunatics who have now refused to buy Yorkshire tea.
Oh, yes.
Because Rishi Sunak took a photo with Yorkshire tea.
Unbelievable.
I mean, if they're that woke, why are they drinking tea anyway? Because surely tea is the product that made the British Empire great.
Do you know
it's
why?
It's rooted in cultural appropriation.
You know
it's rooted in slavery.
Because
it's rooted in...
proper tea is theft.
Exactly.
Very good. Very good.
That's the voice of Jerry Hayes, the barrister, who disgracefully managed to get that in. Proper tea is a theft. Very good. Let's go to the phones. Mark is in Hailsham. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
Listening to your views on Harry and Meghan, two of the most irritating people on the planet, I couldn't agree with you more.
Yes.
It's very interesting. This morning, he apparently told people to call him Harry.
Yes.
Well, the reason I phoned is... I'd love you to organise a poll of the residents of Sussex.
Mm.
I've been a long-standing resident of Sussex.
Yes, I know Hailsham very well.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do, yeah. It's a nice little place, very convenient.
Yes.
And I'd be interested to know a poll of residents of Sussex to see whether they want our county's name sullied by associating with... this narcissistic pair.
Well, it's a very good point. I've said this many times. You know, I've got a house in Sussex where I go every weekend, and we have always been firmly of the belief there is only one Duke of Sussex, and it's our Labrador, and that's what we're going to call him. You know, from this, and he's far better behaved than Prince Harry is, I have to tell you.
It's not hard.
Yes, but I like the idea. I think we may well do a poll of the people in Sussex, Mark. Thank you very much indeed. Let's talk to Mike.
Please do. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Let's talk to Mike, who's in York. Hello, Mr. Mike. How are you?
Could be a Friday one, that.
Well, you know, if you don't want to, you know, you might say to me, just call me Mike, or, you know, just call me Harry, or, you know, I call you Mr. Mike. It gives you a certain status.
Yeah. I'd like to talk about the EU, but first of all, can I just mention the Langley Witches?
The Langley Witches?
Have you heard of them?
I haven't, actually, no. Who are they?
Okay. In the 1980s, a young child had a very good imagination.
Right.
So these social workers thought he was under the spell of Langley Witches.
Oh, right. I think I do remember something about this, actually.
So what they did is they removed a load of children. This is in the 1980s, not
the
1800s.
Right.
They removed a load of children with the cooperation of the police, put them into care where they were abused.
And where was this going on?
This is Langley. So it's a council estate.
Because was there not a similar case up in the Orkneys or something as well?
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
I remember the Orkneys one particularly.
Yeah, well, I know one of the people who suffered there.
Okay.
You know, so that was in the 1980s.
Mm.
Now, I know they've dismissed the conspiracy theory around Parliament with VIPs.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, the Langley Witches, if anybody's listening, read up on it, and you'll have to sit back and just, well, not believe it.
Yeah.
But it's true. It's absolutely true that in 1980, somebody could accuse kids of being witches.
But the point of the story you're explaining is that these people were faking the fact that there were witches in order to take these kids into care and then deliberately abuse them, or was that just an unfortunate happening afterwards?
There's a lot of people that we've already named. Cyril Smith. Rochdale's not got a good name for child protection.
No, it hasn't.
You know, those social workers continued in their profession years after.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is there's a difference between, you know, kids being removed from their homes and put in care if that's because they genuinely felt there was something wrong and they made a mistake, or if it wasn't a mistake and they were deliberately removing them in order to put them in a place where they would be easy prey.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
if a child kind of with an overactive imagination says, I've been dancing on what would be out bets on the tops, on the moors.
Right.
In the nude, dancing around a fire.
Mm.
I mean, it does stretch anybody else's imagination that's an adult.
Oh, no, it does. But my point is about the kind of, you know, the responsibility and the reprehensible nature of what happened and whether, you know, it was done all as one thing or whether the second part happened as a kind of result of the first part. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do, but what I'm asking is, why don't we have an investigation and then find out all the facts?
Yes, I wouldn't be against that. I wouldn't be against that. Now, talk to me about EU fishing, because we're running out of time.
OK. Barnier goes on about environment and quality and things like that. Well, I watched RT this morning, Russia Today, and apparently the Belgians are going over into France and fly tipping rubbish.
Are they?
So that's an environmental problem. Because they can. Because they can.
Right.
And the second thing is food. Once we get come out of the EU, we can do our own food sampling and our own quality checks. And whilst a lot of these people like Batters and FU complain about farming...
Yeah.
Once we get the results of those, I think chlorinated chicken is the worst of our problems, because Spain, for instance, irradiates food like there's no tomorrow.
Mm. There's plenty of food coming here from the EU, which is, you know, got chlorine-assisted cleaning in it.
Yeah, there is. But the other thing is, and this is why I worry about dementia and all the other kind of diseases that's kind of popped up just recently, is the number of times you must have eaten things and you thought that tastes of nothing. Well, how many times do they irradiate it so that it can pass on the shelves?
Yes, well, I mean, it's a very good question. But listen, funnily enough, we'll come back to the food conversation, I'm sure, in the future, because there's lots of things I've got to say about that. Because I buy, for example, if I buy organic meat from the farm shop down in Sussex, where I go from time to time, it stays fresh a lot longer than the stuff that you can buy in any supermarket. Let's talk to Cornelius, who's in Swansea. Hello, Cornelius.
Mike, how are you?
Good, sir. What can I do for you?
Well, I was listening to the news and the bulletins going on about the coronavirus, and my daughter, I tried to talk her out of going on vacation, because they have now only last week, the weekend, I drove them to Luton Airport, and they've flown to Tenerife, and they're in the hotel next to the hotel
that
had got a shutdown. And then my concern was, because I was listening to your programme this morning, talking to a GP from London, it's my granddaughter. It's the first holiday they've had since my granddaughter was born, and she's 18 months old. And, of course, my daughter's bloody panicking, more so than doing my granddaughter, because obviously her immune system isn't as strong as an adult.
What are they being told in Tenerife?
Well, my daughter's in a hotel which is close by, not adjacent to it or anything, but they got freedom of movement.
Right.
I never thought I'd like to hear that word, freedom of movement, mind.
Yes.
But they do have freedom of movement in the hotel, and the information they're having is what we've heard on the media and the TV over here is that the hotel in question is in lockdown and nobody's allowed in or out until they've done all the testing.
Right, okay. You know? Well, hopefully then. And when are they due to come back then?
Are you supposed to pick them up on the weekend around Saturday or Sunday? I'm not quite sure, to be honest, mate.
Okay.
But there was, last time I spoke to you, I said, you know, there's a number of things on my mind I'd like to talk to you about. But I know we've got a lot of people trying to get on the show. But I listened to Emily Mattis last night, the Harvey Weinstein case, and listened to her attorney. And then Julie Hartley Brewer is in a bit of a link in my thoughts in relation to his case. Because the first time I ever listened to Julie Hartley Brewer was about 3-4 years ago when she was on Question Time, and there was a question from the audience on about a professional football player in Wales, Chad Evans, who got put in jail.
Yes, I remember him.
Right, and he was innocent.
Right.
And Julie Hartley Brewer was the only one on a panel of Question Time that actually read the case or something rather than said and made a statement saying that she would be frightened of any young man going out on a Friday night if they got into an altercation, they'd be in a serious situation. Because this young girl went to a hotel room with two people, had sexual intercourse with both people, but only the professional football player raped her.
Yes.
And yet, he got put in jail, lost his career, lost his professional footballism, like everything, gone.
I know, and it still reverberates around him. Cornelius, you're absolutely right. We have got lots of people who want to get on. We have got lots of people to talk to. We have got lots of stuff to do, so do call us back again because there's other things, I'm sure, that you want to say. Coming up, we're going to have Prime Minister's Questions. You'll be able to watch it on our YouTube channel as well as watching us. Alex Phillips is going to be joining us as well, former Brexit Party MEP. She's going to be giving us her thoughts on how Boris looks, what Jeremy Corbyn says, and all the rest of it as well. We'll take more of your calls. It's all coming up on Talk Radio.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Talk Radio. We've got Prime Minister's Questions on in the background, but let's have a quick listen in to see whether it's a question that we need to hear about. I think it's to do with the IRA.
March. All the assurances, all the promises, the manifest of commitment will amount to nothing more than meaningless, empty platitudes.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it's to rectify matters such as the one to which he draws the House's attention, that this government is finally bringing in a law to prevent the vexatious prosecution of our hard-working, hard-serving veterans when no new evidence has been produced.
Siobhan Lightbulb. Mr. Speaker.
That was a question there on, obviously, the prosecution of Soldier X, which I guess is still going to go ahead, but hasn't got really quite into the proper legal process yet. I'm here with Alex Phillips, former Brexit Party MEP. That story, I'm sure, will run and run for a while. But let's talk a little bit about Donald Trump and India, because India is a place you know well. You've been to several kind of political situations over there. What do you make of Donald Trump's visit, and why is he there? Because it's quite unusual for an American president to go to India in the first place.
Yeah, but it's great. I think it's fantastic. I used to live and work in India. One of my first journalism jobs was working for a newspaper called The Hindu over there. And yeah, before Christmas, I was over there at the invitation of Modi himself, and I met the Prime Minister, and I went to the disputed Jammu-Kashmir region to find out what was going on there as part of a fact-finding mission. And I think, actually, America's ignored India for a long time, but India is one of the world's rising superpowers, and it's an incredibly important country. People see Modi as a populist, because, or a Hindu nationalist, is how he's often labelled, because he's been quite assertive about the perceived threats from Pakistan. He's brought in this piece of legislation saying if you're a religious minority from one of the Muslim majority countries surrounding the north of India, then you can declare amnesty in India because it's a secular society. Right. But what he's done is said, but that does not involve Muslims. In some respects, surely that makes sense. If you're saying people who are being persecuted in Muslim majority countries who want to leave, then naturally that isn't going to involve the Muslims themselves. But it does put him in a difficult situation because legally, India isn't supposed to have a national religion. It is a secular country. My experience of living there, and I used to live down in the very south, in the state I lived, it was very Hindu, but the neighbouring state was a huge mix. There were Syrian Christians, there were Jews, there were Muslims, there were Orthodox Hindus. And actually, as a country, India's always rubbed along very well as a secular nation.
And it's such a massive country that it's incredible that it can even be governed at all in some ways. I mean, one of the things that I like about India is it has fewer representatives in the Congress than we have in our country, in the House of Lords and the House of Commons put together. They managed to govern a country with like 2 billion people, with about half the number of representatives in Parliament.
Yeah, I mean, there's actually a lot more state-devolved government in India, which actually, when you look at India on a map, it's far smaller than it is in real life. Yeah. If maps were drawn to scale, India is absolutely enormous. Mm. And every single state in India is like its own country. But India is going to play an increasingly critical role. And I think that it's important, especially when it comes to foreign affairs, the fight against terrorism, when it comes to trade, it's very important that the West embraces India. And I think that Trump's been drawn to Modi because Modi's being persecuted as a populist in the same way that Trump is. So the two find they've got some common ground there. What I would like to see now, especially in post-Brexit Britain, is the UK also turning to India, because we are naturally the closest allies of India.
Yes, for an awful lot of reasons.
For a lot of reasons. Yeah. As a former colony, we've got a huge amount of the Indian diaspora living in our country. And it's about time we turned around and said, you're very important to us. We want to embrace you culturally in this country. You know, curry is one of our national dishes.
Yeah.
But I think it's about time as well we start opening ourselves up to the Vedic religions. Constantly we'd have having conversations going on about Islam, but how much do people in the UK understand about Sikhism, Buddhism, Hinduism? Mm. And they're very important cultural
religions. Well, I see that
here.
Some people on the left have been sort of poking around into Rishi Sunak's religion and saying that he belongs to some kind of...
Wasn't it Suella Braverman's?
Oh, was it hers?
Yeah, Buddhist.
But I think his as well, because he's... I think, I believe he's a Hindu. But, you know, they're almost referring to them as kind of, you know, slightly oddball religions. You know, this is stuff that they write in The Guardian about them, of course. But it's only because they're Tories that they're even looking at them in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's not a trendy religion, is it? You know, this isn't a religion that people around the world feel that they need to sort of protect and, you know, constantly come out and say, well, we, you know, all Hindus are great and it's a religion of peace and all the rest of it. Yeah. I mean, it's a fascinating religion. I consider myself a Hindu, actually. I've been a non-beef eater and practising Hinduism, believe it or not, for 15 years.
Okay.
And it's a fascinating collection of philosophies, and I think we could learn a lot in the West from those cultures.
Well, there's much to talk about. I'm sure we'll be doing this again soon, because unfortunately we've come to the end practically of our coverage of Prime Minister's questions, because we've got lots more to do. Coming up, we're going to be talking to LaDonna Harvey over in the US of A. We'll get her view on the Trump visit to India and on the fallout from Harvey Weinstein and from yet another Democratic debate, which didn't go terribly well, I have to say. Alex, thank you very much indeed. We'll see you soon. Alex Phillips, former MEP for the Brexit Party. She'll be back here, I'm sure, on Talk Radio very shortly.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Prime Minister's questions has been and gone. Matt Hancock is now making a statement probably about the coronavirus problem, which we will check in with a little bit later on if he says anything untoward or particularly exciting. However, I'm delighted to say we're now joined live in the studio by John Burton Arace, a man who is described as the man, the magic and the mayhem. I must admit, sitting opposite you, John, you don't look particularly mayhem infested, if I may say so. But
I've left my cloak at home.
Well, the great thing about having a life as you have had, which has been very colourful and at times, I'm sure, quite alarming, is that you're not like that all the time, are you? You have sort of very many facets of what it is that you do.
Absolutely. You know, I'm a dad again, and my son, 15, he's really good and into his rugby, and I love rugby. It's like a religion to me. And, I live on a little crumbly farm in Devon. Chickens, guinea fowl, dogs.
Yeah.
And I love my fishing. It's not all mayhem.
No, it doesn't sound terribly like that. But you've also been awarded Michelin stars in your work in various kitchens. The Landmark Hotel, you were associated, I think, with the Manoir of Quatre Saisons.
Yes, Rémy Blanc's head chef for about 3.5 years.
Okay, fantastic. I think I had Michel Blanc, I think, in recently, the one who's now running the new restaurant in Westminster. Michel Roux Jr. Yes.
Because there's a Michel Roux Senior.
There's a Michel Roux Senior and Michel Roux Jr.
Who I love, and he has the Waterside Inn at Bray.
Yes, that's right. And the business of being a chef has become really massive, hasn't it? Because you guys are sort of like superstars now.
Well, probably. I mean, I think it's calming down, thank goodness. You know, it's no longer, you know, what toothpaste does Marco Pio
eat?
Right. It's more, I think, it's like a lot of things. We were our own worst enemies in some respects because we were basically show-offs, basically bonkers and driven.
Egomaniacs?
Total.
Yeah.
And when you're a British chef, going back 20 years, you've got a lot to prove.
Yeah.
Because you're always told that we're really bad cooks. We don't know what we're talking about when it comes to food. And I'm happy to say there's been a sort of reversal of that.
There totally has. I mean, I went away from this country to live in America back in the 80s. And when I left London, it was not what you might describe as a sort of a home of great gastronomy. And I found New York then to be fascinating because on every street there was a great restaurant. And, you know, if you didn't do well, you were closing
down.
New
York's amazing, actually.
It really is, yeah. But then, ever since I've been back, and I've been back 20-odd years, Borough Market, which is across the road there, is one of the most fabulous places, I think, in the world for food. You know, there are some great restaurants now.
Yeah, I'm going to do a pop-up there in a few weeks.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll have to pop over there because I was actually there yesterday. I was at the Rabot, you know, the chocolate restaurant, which does some very interesting things with chocolate, which you wouldn't really believe they could do. They had a dip with chocolate and balsamic vinegar for the bread, which was beautiful, really good. And there's just so much now on offer here.
It's absolutely fabulous. I mean, I think especially London, it's probably, I'd say London and maybe Singapore, the gastronomic places to eat.
Yes.
And we've got more than anyone else, especially in France, we've got the variety. So we can eat well with whatever food.
Right.
You know, we've got lovely, lovely Indian restaurants, Chinese restaurants, Korean restaurants, Vietnamese restaurants, Italian restaurants in London are superb. So we're very lucky.
Are you one of those chefs that sort of chooses and picks from different cultures, as it were? What's your kind of... how would you describe
your
cuisine?
Because I was born and brought up in the Far East.
Yeah, in Singapore, right?
Yeah, so, but I've lived in, like, Malaysia, Indonesia, and places like... And Thailand, I went to school when I was, like, 10 or 11 there for a few years. And so I love all that. In fact, I've just... I've got a job in Vietnam, and...
Vietnamese food is amazing, isn't it? And that's something I only relatively recently discovered.
Also, nobody knows it. I think, you know, Cambodia and Vietnam are treasures when it comes to food. It's so perfumed. Everyone knows the qualities of Thai food, and I'm not knocking Thai food at all. But I think Vietnamese food is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, so there's, again, a lot of Vietnamese places in London now.
They're starting, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's not all that common, but there are areas of family-run businesses which are fabulous. Mm.
So can you, as a chef, kind of cherry pick things from their cuisine, as it were, to use in other things.
So I've been in Vietnam now for 18 months, and I've been what I have to do is a European version of what I would do if I was in France, but using their ingredients. Mm. And at the same time, that influence of Vietnamese food gets into my food.
Right.
And hopefully it's better.
Yes.
So, and I like to do that sort of, not fusion, but it is fused with what's available. Because the most important thing, wherever you are in the world, when you're cooking, is ingredients.
Yeah.
And if you get it fresh, and it's ripe, and it's ready, not only is it cheaper, but it's more flavoursome.
Yes.
So that's, you know...
Well, I was saying as well, because I do quite a lot of shopping over there, and it can be expensive, but if you go buy vegetables from Borough Market, there's a couple of stalls there, they're absolutely, you know, rock-bottom prices.
That's a great example. Borough Market is absolutely fantastic.
And there's a couple of places where I can buy, you know, there's farm shops down in Sussex where I am sometimes, and you know, the organic meat that you buy lasts so much longer, you keep it in the fridge for longer than any of the stuff you buy in a supermarket.
Absolutely, it's
not
wrapped up in loads of plastic.
No, yeah. Exactly right. And so as far as your mayhem days, I mean, you know, describe some of those.
Oh, no, so I've had some moments, apparently.
Mad moments? Genuinely?
Yeah, genuinely mad moments. I probably suffered fools. I didn't suffer fools gladly. I was on a mission. I probably put my job, and to some extent still do, before anything else in my life. And that's an awful thing to say. You know, if my son was hearing, he would, you know, have a go at me. But
I think a lot of successful people do that, don't they?
It's just... I know it's terribly corny nowadays, but I absolutely love my work.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm getting older, but I'm still inspired and excited, and I'm still learning about food every day.
Of course.
So,
because if you weren't, you would be appallingly sort of boring and dull, and nobody would want to talk to you.
Yeah, no.
If you thought you knew everything.
Some people in the old days didn't want to talk to me at all anyway, but...
Was there a drinking aspect to it? Because a lot of chefs say that it's very difficult not to drink copious amounts.
I had drinking moments, but I didn't have a drinking habit.
Right.
And I never touched drugs, but... and some chefs did and do. But I was just looking back. It's funny, this book that's coming out... That's right, opened everything up to me. And actually, sometimes it's a bit like, oh, my God, really?
do you want to share it?
Well, it's a bit like... Well, I tell you the truth. Lots of people have come to me and asked if they could write my biography, autobiography. And I said, absolutely no, get stuff, because I'm not dead yet. You can do it when I'm dead. And then I met this guy. He's a really lovely man. He spent 2 years being tippy-toeing around the idea... investigating. He must have spent a bloody fortune, because I've worked and lived all over the world. So, and he's a fabulous thing. And then, you know, a few things, clippings out of old newspapers that got in there, and it made me feel, you know, it's a bit like my cooking. You know, I sometimes, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I cooked something and I used to think it was the cat's whiskers. Mm. You get it out of the drawer now or the bureau and have a look at it, and you're embarrassed, that's not my food, and you put it away, because it's a progression.
Yes.
And, you know, I was mad, I was young, I was crazy. I was finding my way in a very hard environment. I mean, when, you know, I lived upstairs because I couldn't live anywhere else, everything, penny, I sold my car, I borrowed, I had shareholders, but everything depended on me.
Mm.
And at the same time...
And you had to keep coming up with new things, presumably.
Yeah, but that's the thing. And chefs are probably... Not all chefs. I met some that are very good businessmen. But chefs are just blinkered to producing the best plate of food. And sod the price.
Yeah.
But... And I think I was guilty of that in some sense. But you learn the hard way. Like everything in life, you know. If you speed in your car, you're going to get nicked.
Mm.
You know, and if you do that, you're going to get nicked. And if you do that, you're going to get told off. And if you do that, you're going to get divorced. Well, yeah. Okay, so it's all happened to me.
And you got divorced a couple of times, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, so how's it going this time?
Well, it's going all right at the moment, I have to say. And I'm so blessed, because my son, he's 15, is just doing... He's playing for Devon. He's, you know, he's just amazing. I hope one day we'll see him... We'll see him out there.
See him out there at the Six Nations.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the Six Nations.
So
as far as the business of cooking is concerned, are you as kind of busy as you always were in terms of
I'm not focused on one restaurant. Right. So last year, for example, I worked in the Maldives for the Suniva Fushi Group.
Okay.
And I've worked for Chen in Vietnam, as I said. I got an old mate, Mucker, in Guernsey, and I'm going there next week for a couple of weeks to work for his little hotel restaurant in Guernsey. And so I move around. I've got a job in Nice coming up. I've got this book tour.
Sounds great.
Well, yeah, it's...
I mean,
it's
busy.
Great for me,
yeah,
because I'm doing what I love best and meeting different people, seeing different ingredients, going to different markets. And it's that's another book, really, because, you know, you get inspired. You, when I first went to Vietnam, we went fishing. That's the first thing we did because I wanted to find out what's, you know, what's in the water and see how I can adapt my recipes to that or maybe nick a bit of theirs and put a bit of mine.
Right.
And so that's how I did it.
Wonderful. Well, it's great to meet you. You're doing a tour as well, so people can find you at various points around the country.
Yeah, I'm going all over England, but I've got at least two or three venues and book signings and chats to do in central London. But it's all on my website.
So. Okay. johnburtonrace.co.uk. I shall come visit you when you're over the road, and perhaps I'll buy you a pint. The Wheat Sheaf. Thank you very much indeed. John Burton Race, book's out coming soon, March 27th, The Man, the Magic and the Mayhem. The mayhem here continues at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning when I come back.
Talk Radio. Across the UK, online, on DAB and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.